Hello, and welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast. If you don't want a cookie cutter generic home, and instead you want a beautiful, meaningful home that's layered with personality, then you are going to be so inspired by the conversations we have on this show. We talk about why the environments we create matter and how to set up our rooms to evoke specific feelings and experiences that are right for you wherever you are in your life right now. I'm Zandra, your host and creator of the Slow Style Home Framework that teaches you how to make really thoughtful and informed decisions about your home rather than chasing current trends that may not last or staying stuck with rooms you hate, feeling overwhelmed with too many choices. Right now, when you join our monthly membership, the Slow Style Society, you'll get a personalized deep dive into your vision of what a dream home looks and feels like. And together, we'll come up with a plan on how to achieve that. If that sounds pretty awesome to you, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society for all of the details. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later on. Right now, let's just jump into today's episode. Today is all about art. I think art is the one aspect of a home that's really critical to creating your signature style. It's probably obvious why. There's nothing that reflects who you are as deeply as what you choose to hang on your walls. My guest today is Rachel Lohse, author of the book Art at Home, where you'll find both practical information about finding and purchasing and hanging art, as well as inspiration from homes that are filled with it. Rachel has taken something that is completely subjective in terms of taste and appeal and made it make a bit more sense in terms of how we might all become collectors according to our own personal narratives. Here's Rachel. Rachel Lohse, welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Great. And I am thrilled about this book. People who have been listening to the show for a while know that I proselytize about buying art all the time. So it is a subject near and dear to my heart. The book is Art at Home, an accessible guide to collecting and curating art in your home. And I want to start by asking you a little bit about personally your relationship with art. How did you start collecting it? Why do you love it so much to the point where you had to write a whole book about it?
Actually, the reason I wrote the book was not so much my own relationship with art, but I come from a journalistic background. And I saw that there were a lot of stories out there about people collecting art, but they were just little short stories. Just a few tips and that kind of thing. But there never seemed to be anything that gave people a lot of information or the kind of information that would give you confidence to go out and do it yourself. And previously, before I got into interiors, I was in fashion. I was the deputy editor of Elle in UK. And fashion and art, I think, have a similar kind of have a relationship where people can be very nervous about taste and good taste and bad taste. And am I in fashion? Am I not in fashion? And what does what I choose say about me? And do I want people to see that? And all that kind of churning and maelstrom of doubt that people can have about it. And so with art, I felt there was a need for a book to give people the kind of the confidence to go out and buy art, because it is, like with fashion, art is hugely personal. So what I might love, you might not love, and vice versa. And to say to people, that's fine. You don't have, it doesn't matter if you're someone else, your friend doesn't like that piece of art. It doesn't mean that your taste is bad in art. It's just that piece is not speaking to them in the way that it's speaking to you. And that's what it's all about. And when I looked out there, there were no other books like this, which I thought was just astonishing, because there are so many books about interiors, every minutiae, every little bit of styling. But weirdly, there was nothing about art, from giving you the basic information from what a medium is, explaining the jargon, just so that when you went out to buy it, you felt you knew what you were doing and could do it with confidence and therefore really enjoy it. So that's how the book came about. I have some art in my home. I'm in the process of putting together a gallery wall for my kitchen, which has been an ongoing thing because I never find time to sit down and look at it properly. But I do. I have traveled a fair bit, and I always buy art when I've gone away, because I think quite often that's a really good way of remembering where I have been.
Yes.
And you can have postcards and all that kind of thing, and I will stick little postcards on my wall in my office, and I have a collection, and I've always done that, and they, over time I just add to them, which I really enjoy doing as well. But I think a piece of art or a sculpture or something that's a creative piece from wherever it is that you've traveled is a really nice way of remembering that trip and the culture of the country that you've come from. So that's the kind of stuff that I like to collect as well.
Absolutely. I think that was a real eye-opener for me when we first started traveling together. And the very first piece of work we bought was a huge carved wooden fish that was painted. And it was the start of both our collecting art together, but then also being sure to collect it while we travel. And then the next piece, I think we were in Italy and we bought just a watercolor off of a street artist. And it was, I don't know, maybe 20 pounds, not pounds, not even euros. This was back before.
Lira.
Yeah, exactly. The lira before the euro. But that's still such a wonderful piece because it brings me right back to the street where we bought it and the artist and with his easel standing out there and all of that. And it's just so wonderful. Okay, so what I got from the book is that it is a fabulous resource. It's a resource book because it's the kind that you can keep going back to when you've forgotten a tip or a bit of advice or a vocabulary word or whatever. It's just, it's really jam-packed.
Thank you. Because that's what I wanted it to be, really.
Yes.
Every bit of it from choosing the understanding what the art is to framing it and hanging it. So every part of having art in your home is covered.
Exactly. And the word confidence that you brought up, I think that's the key because like you say in the book, it's very intimidating. It can be very intimidating. Where to start? What is it worth? How do I know if it's the right thing? What about the size, the colors? It can be very intimidating. And I want everyone to just shed all of that inhibition and intimidation so that they can start collecting art and embracing it. And one thing that I think you'll get if you're reading through the book is just it's intense how much the artwork in the homes that you share really impacts the viewer, the person standing in the room. We're not even standing in the room for real. This is a book, but like you want the artwork that these people have collected. It's so personal. It's so beautifully displayed and it is everywhere. And I wonder if you could give us an example, either from your own home or a couple of examples from the book, stories that you remember where you're looking at a piece of art or a collection of art and you're going, oh yes, this really embodies the person who lives there.
One of my favorite homes in the book is the one of, she's a jewelry artist called Sandro Barrio von Herter. And I loved her home in particular because, yes, her home, there is art everywhere in her home. But what I liked very much about it is that it was a mix of art. So she had pieces that reminded her of where she got married, which I think it was in Greece. And then there were other pieces that reflected her background and her husband's background, which is Spain, and then pieces that reflected, I think she had a piece that her in-laws had inherited and bought 30, 40 years ago when they were in New York. And then there were things which I thought was really clever is that she had magazines it was a book of illustrations which was falling apart because it was really old. And for a lot of people, you just think, oh, it would get tucked in a corner and you'd never see these pictures again. But she had the confidence to slit the pages and frame them. And she's done that with sort of two different books in her house. And it's amazing because it looks, just put them in a grid and it just looks really impactful. And you see them as soon as you walk into the house and you get to see them every day and enjoy them every day. And I just think something like that, I think that really shows you what art can do and how you can use it in a way that you might not have thought of. It doesn't mean that you have to go to a shop and buy a piece of art. It can be something that you already have that you don't really know how to display, and this might give you an idea of what you can do.
Yes.
So that is one of the homes that I think there's some really lovely ideas in there that I would copy and think, oh, that's something that I can do now.
I love this home so much, and I was just soaking it in And then right after that, the next chapter, this is what I got really giddy about your book. The next chapter is, in my mind, almost completely different. Sandra's home is vibrant and bold, and the colors are incredible. And then the very next chapter is the home of, I'm going to mess up her name, Dorth
Kvist.
I think so. Okay. She's a garden designer. And so her home has all of these plants in it. There's a lot of more muted colors. There's a lot of nature, natural references along with the living plants. It's just a completely different home. And yet you can see the impact of the art. Mm. So describe that for us. How do you think she shows up in her home?
What I found fascinating about Dorth is that if you look at older pictures of her home from a few years ago when she was a fashion designer, it felt very different. It was much bolder and graphic. And then she changed careers and became a landscape designer. Her home is now much more softer and relaxed. It was amazing. And some of the art is the same, but a lot of the art is different. But what I love about her home is that she's done sort of a sideboard, and above it is a mini sort of gallery wall, and pictures that really mean something to her, plus S, which I think is her husband's initial. But next to that, she's got a sculpture. It's just a branch, and off that she's hung some plants. And then in other places, she mixes. And this is the other thing, is that with art, it doesn't have to be just art. It can, like, pictures as you think of them. She's put in mixed her art in with flowers and glass bottles with dried flowers in there. And she just mixes them all in, and they create panorama together. They're not separate things that she's put together. One leans on the other and they all look as if they belong there. And together they give the house a really lovely, soft, relaxing feel as soon as you walk into it, almost like you get when you walk into a lovely garden. And I think she's done that both with her artwork, by putting it next to plants and hanging plants and plants on shelves and things like that. And that together works really well.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that it is soft. It's soft in a way that the previous chapter with the bold and the vibrant is not soft. It's playful. It's energetic. Whereas this other, the walls are more muted, everything. And then we jump to a chapter you call Dark Star about Catherine Ashton. Mm. Now, I love a dark wall, and hers, as you say, are practically black, which I think is be very intimidating for a lot of people. I don't know if it's her entire home, but it's a good bit of her home that is this almost black color. And wow, is that ever a showcase for her art. How do you think that color choice reflects her?
I think it's a very dramatic home. Because the house, the apartment is a kind of like a new build kind of home. So it doesn't have lots of period features and all the rest of that give you lots of character. So really it's like those kinds of homes, they're like a blank canvas, and you have to create the mood in there completely. There's nothing there to really help you. And I think this house really shows the sort of the drama of someone who sort of a choice of the dark walls, which interestingly really showcases the art. It makes all the art
beautifully
pop out.
Absolutely.
And in a way that I think it wouldn't against a paler walls. She very much loves hunting down vintage pieces. So a lot of what is on her walls is vintage. So it hasn't either cost a huge sum of money.
Right.
Some of her favorite pieces, one was found in the pouring rain, as it always is in England, at a sort of a vintage market. And some of them are framed, some of them are not framed. And I just think she shows a lot of confidence in how to do your art.
Right.
Because the walls are, if you haven't seen, it's pretty much a gallery wall from top. So I think I think this sort of house shows how you can put together all sorts of different things. And then in the kitchen also, she's hanging cutting boards, and which again is an everyday item you wouldn't think of as art, but in the kitchen it really does work. It introduces sort of different shapes, because pictures are often rectangular,
right?
This is a rounder, softer shape, and that kind of visually changes things up a bit. And I think this is just, it's a house absolutely full of drama. And I think
that's
so amazing about it.
And I want to just come back to that point you made, make sure everybody caught it, because I actually didn't. You said this is one of those, I don't know if you said it was a new build, newer build, but I mean, it doesn't have any of the molding. It doesn't have the wainscoting. It doesn't have a lot of things that your older homes are going to have. And you would never, I skipped right over that. And now I'm looking like, oh my gosh, you're right. There's no molding. There's no nothing. I can see when you moved in, this being a white box. And you would never notice that because of all of the detail in the frames, the artwork themselves, the sculptural elements that she's got hanging. And then, of course, her lighting that she's chosen, the shapes of her furniture, all of it. It really has personalized what could have been a very standard kind of cookie cutter looking box. So it's amazing.
It is. And I think also what I think was interesting and is very bold is in those sorts of places, you'd be tempted to keep the walls quite pale.
You would, yes.
Bringing in the, thinking of the idea of light and all that kind of thing. But she's, and I don't think it's a particularly, you know, it's not a house that is full of light. And she's leaned into that, which I think is great, and gone, right, well, I don't have a lot of light. I'm not going to try and make the walls white and do what I can. I'm actually going to go with the fact that this is quite a dark house, dark apartment, and make it moody and you know, it's glamorous, you know, sort of in with all this sort of there's difference of glass chandeliers and shelves, but it's also a very eclectic mix. So her rugs are a Moroccan rug against a sort of another type of a Persian rug and all that kind of thing. So it's an amazing mix, but together it creates a sort of a space that makes you don't notice that it's not a very light property because you're just so entranced about it.
Yes. It's really inspiring. And then you turn the page yet again to yet another home, June and David Rosenkilds. And it's the opposite. It's maybe one piece of artwork on a wall. That's it. Not a gallery wall. It's light. It's bright. It's very modern in terms of the artwork that they've collected. But there's a mix of furniture styles for sure. It's not all contemporary. Some of it's mid-century. Some of it's much older. And how would you say that this embodies who these people are?
We'll be back after a quick break.
I assume you're here because you want a one-of-a-kind, personality-filled home, right? Well, in order to have that, you need to define and develop your signature style. When you do that, you're going to understand how to mix what you already have with new things you find, focusing on who you are and what you love, putting it all together in a cohesive way. So what's stopping you? Well, let me know if this sounds about right. Not enough time, not enough money, and a lack of creativity or design knowledge, which makes you feel overwhelmed and insecure about pulling the trigger and changing things up. This is why I created the Slow Style Society, to help you take action on making your dream home a reality. It's part social club for people who like to just geek out on design, and part hands-on learning experience where you get better and better at making decor decisions for each room in your home. And for the next few weeks, I'm offering all new members an additional one-on-one style session with yours truly. So I'll take you through the lessons so you know exactly what to focus on inside the Slow Style framework, in what order, and you'll have a personalized support system from me to get you there. Go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society so we can get started right away. Let's not wait for that imaginary perfect time to create your beautiful, meaningful home. Again, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society. Okay, back to the episode.
June and her husband David are quite, I think, are quite a sort of a modern couple, and she works, she used to work in a gallery, and that's when she started to have a relationship with art. And I think that's when she first realized that she could afford art, that art wasn't something that was only for people with huge salaries.
Right.
And she started collecting smaller pieces, and this house, unlike Catherine's house, does have all these beautiful features. So it does have all the mouldings and all the rest of it, and quite a lot of it. So quite beautiful paneling between the floor and on the walls. And so they do have a very modern aesthetic, and it's much more pared back, as you can see. And so for them, artworks are sort of pieces that that draw the eye and are very much central to the room, but you just look at that sort of one, almost like the gallery kind of thing. You do look at it and you take it in.
Yeah.
And very much also reflect the room. So for the one of the rooms is she has two living rooms, and in the more relaxed living room, she has a sort of a lovely corner sofa that you could go to sleep on. And in that room, she's chosen a piece of artwork that is quite pink and a slash of goldy color in it.
Yeah.
But it's quite a calming piece of work when you look at it, and it fits with the calm of the mood, which is what she's wanted in that space. And then you go into her more formal living room. It's an artwork that goes through the corner of the room.
Yes, I love that.
And she actually asks, and this again shows quite a lot of confidence, because she asked the artist, he hadn't done it that way. He had one really long panel, and she said, I have enormous walls and I can't fit that in my house. So right. Can I cut it up and slip and do this and put it at right angles? And he thought that was a good idea. So now that's how he sells it, kind of thing.
Oh, it's how he sells it. Oh my
God. He does it's that fabulous. As well now, because he realizes that was an option. And it's interesting because it holds that corner of the room, and corners can be tricky spaces, but it's just one painting at right angles. And I think it works really well.
Oh, it does. It just wraps right into that corner. And it's really interesting. And when I read that about how she asked the artist if she could do that, that's great. And the great that the artist was game for it. And they didn't think their work was so precious that you cannot possibly alter that. Yeah. So that is wonderful. What are some of your favorite examples of how people have mixed things together that might not have worked in one's imagination, but then you see it in the flesh and you're like, oh my gosh, this mix is incredible? Because I think mastering the mix is something that really trips people up, or they get very thematic, right? So let's say they've traveled to Japan and they come back and they've got a gorgeous poster from a museum in Japan that was all about kimonos or something. And so now they've got that. And now they think, oh my gosh, everything in the room has to have those lines to it and that pattern to it, that color scheme. How do we combat that? Because I think that's pretty limiting if you think it all now has to match.
Yeah, I think the thing to remember is that there are no rules in that sense. I think it's just certain things will look better together. It's thinking of color and sort of shape. And one of my favorite sort of pictures is the opening picture that goes with the chapter called Art is Not Just Paintings, because now art is not just paintings. We put all sorts of things on the wall, and I talk about the idea of this thing called the memory wall, which is you look at a wall and it has memories, all kinds of memories. So it can be like a ticket from a concert that you absolutely love, to a dress that you might have owed, that your child wore. And in this picture, this homeowner, she has an amazing old mirror, a wooden mirror that's carved around it. But then next to it is like a lithograph of a whale. And below it is a black feather. And on one side of it is seaweed. And I suppose what's holding all of that together is that everything is wooden and quite dark. So it's blacks and natural colors.
Yes.
But it is, and you just want to look at, go up close to the wall and look at it, because one of them is just like a little key.
Yes.
And it's just a sort of a mix of putting things together that in many ways don't relate to one another. Sort of, what's a mirror got to do with a whale? Probably not at all.
Right.
But because they're all a mix of lovely shapes, and I think that's what holds it together, is the shapes and the sort of unusualness of a lot of the pieces.
Yes.
I think a lot of people get quite worked up about having every single frame having to be the same, and it doesn't have to be like that. You can have lots of different frames as long as they speak to one another and they're not all so different that they jar with one another. And I think, but with a lot of this stuff, it's you just have to play with it, and you put it down. You can put it down flat on the floor and just see what works together. And if something doesn't work, you take it out and you replace it with something else. I don't think with this picture, that with this wall, that it would have all been done in one go. I think with many gallery walls and memory walls, you put a few things up and then you start to add the little bits that you like.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. It happens over time. You start with a few pieces that have something connecting them. And like you said, it doesn't have to be the subject matter of the piece of art or the object. It can be that they have similar shapes, or they have two shapes that are opposite, but they look good next to each other. And the same with colors. I think color, finding color, a thread of color going through, not even just in one room, but from room to room, oftentimes helps with that feeling of cohesion. And then I think too, looking at the piece of art on different wall colors to see which one feels like it helps the art the most. So I'm looking at a page from, this is in the chapter of What is Art? And it's actually, I think it's the same house. It's the Sandra house. And it's this beautiful poster of a vase. It looks like it's probably from maybe a museum. And it looks so beautiful against this soft pink wall. And it could look just as dramatic on a black wall, but you have to say, what is the room? What is the feeling I want to have in the room? If this is happens to be a bedroom, and so there's maybe more of a softness to it.
She wanted the room to be sort of serene. So she only put one picture there because the bed head is quite ornate, but to have too much, it would have been too much decoration in the room. So she's just put this sort of one sort of simple vase. And what I like about it in that one is that too, that she's dropped it. So it's just above the bedside table. So part of the painting is below the bed head, so to speak, and the other bit is above it. And it just sort of frames it all really beautifully. And I think those are the sorts of things that unless you see it and see what other people have done, you don't realize, you may not think that is a way that you can hang art. It doesn't always have to be just directly at your eye line. You can have it a little bit higher and lower, and you can play with things like that.
Exactly.
What else is in the room?
Yes, there's so much to learn just from this one photograph. Clearly, everyone who's listening needs to go get the book because there are so many lessons to be learned from how to mix things together and how things express who we are, the embodiment of who we are in our visual narrative that's happening in our homes. And then, of course, all of the fabulous resource material that you've put in the book, very practical things, how to start a collection, how to frame art, how to hang it, how to choose it, all of those kinds of things. And I want to end our conversation with the value of art, how to place value on it. That's another thing that I think people can be very unsure about. How do we know how much we should spend on something? Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on the value of art.
So if you see something and it is $500, and for you, because you love it so much, because perhaps the size of it, something about it speaks to you and you're happy to pay the $500, then I think then it's worth that $500 because you're not going to regret it and feel that you've spent money on something that's not worth it. Art is subjective, but if you did want to like just break it down into what makes an artwork, you want to have some kind of idea of why you're spending what you're spending.
Right.
Then the things you need to look at are who's painted it and where they are in their career. So you will hear things like emerging artist, which is somebody who is literally, as the name suggests, is just starting to learn their trade. They probably haven't done too much. They're probably selling on social media. And I think that's one of the things that social media has enormously broken down the barriers of art. And it gives smaller artists and artists that are starting out access to the public in a way that they never had before. So you will often come across smaller artists who are just kind of testing the water about they themselves don't really know what their artwork is worth.
How to price it, exactly.
What the price is. So they will put a price there to see, is someone prepared to pay this amount for what I'm doing? And then you have the sort of the mid-range artists, which is probably the ones that you'll see in a lot of the more established online galleries and places like that, smaller galleries. And they'll have done it for a sort of a few years. They will have some sort of backstory. So you will be able to see the other work that they've done and get an idea of how their sort of career is going. And then you'll have obviously the the big artists who are household names, and they will show in the big galleries, and their stuff is going to be much more expensive. Starting point is who the artist is. Then it's what is the artwork made of? So if they're using something like resin, which is quite hard to work with and quite expensive as well, that will probably have a starting price higher than someone who's working in just with pencils, because pencils are much cheaper, obviously.
Sure.
But the medium has something to do with it as well. And then finally, is it a one-off? Is it a print, a limited edition print, or is it a poster? So a poster thousands of them will be made. So that in itself makes it not particularly rare. And then you have the limited editions. You're getting something that's a bit special because there are only a finite number of them that will be made, and they all have been signed. And then the final are the sort of the more expensive are the sort of the one-off pieces made by well-known artists. I think the thing with art, as with anything that is handmade, really, is that the person who's created it has spent a huge amount of time doing that. And to a certain extent, you're paying for that sort of creativity and the amount of time and care that they have put into something.
So absolutely.
If you're happy to pay that money, then I think it's absolutely, that's the value of it.
Yes, I agree. And I do feel like being open to the possibility of having an emotional reaction to it, to art, not thinking of it as just decoration, right? It's not buying it because it matches your sofa, but finding pieces that you, that just stop you in your tracks. And you think to yourself, oh my gosh, I want to wake up to that every single morning. It must go in my bedroom. Or, oh, I just, that really resonates with me right now in this time of my life, because of, it could be anything from the subject matter of the painting or the much more abstract, like the brushstrokes, just what, for whatever reason, draw you in. And I think that if you have that kind of a reaction to it, you're much less likely to have buyer's remorse. You are going to understand more viscerally the value of it because you feel connected to it. And I also think that then you want to say, I want this in my home because I want other people to see this aspect of myself. This is a reflection of me, not just what the artist has created, but it a reflection of who I am because I've chosen it and I've hung it. And so I think that is also part of the value. I really can't say enough about how much inspiration this book is giving me, and I think will give anyone who is really trying to figure out what to hang on their walls, how to hang it, how to buy it, and what the possibilities are. There are so many. I just happened to flip to a page in the chapter on how to start a collection, and it's just this little nook, and this person has this little simple desk, but the nook has it's a slanted ceiling. For dramatic slant. And so then, therefore, the little pieces of ephemera that she's taped up onto the wall, hung up on the wall, are also going down the diagonal of the slant of the ceiling. But then she's also outlined it with a string of lights, like a globe lights, like that you would find out in the garden. To highlight the shape of the wall. And it's just, so again, the possibilities of what you can do, what one can do in their homes to really create moments, I guess, moments of surprise and delight and reflection. I think you've captured it so beautifully.
Thank you. As you said, the possibilities are endless, and it just, there is so much you can do with art to allow it to reflect who you are and to create the home that makes, that says who you are, makes you happy to be in your home. And I think so much because of and COVID, and the home has become so much more important to us. And I think we understand much more now, I think, how important the home is to us and how it makes us feel and gives us the sort of platform and foundation with which to go out and do what we need to do or want to do. And I think to be able to use art to help create that space that truly reflects you and makes you feel happy and calm is something that should be encouraged, and everybody should do it and not feel that it's not for them, because art is for everybody.
Wonderfully put. Art is for everyone. Yes, I agree. And thank you so much for encouraging us and giving us guidance. It's much needed and very much appreciated. Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation, Rachel.
Thank you very much for having me, Zandra. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now.